Welcome to the Rockets Collective Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Ali Khandajani. Other two hosts here today will be Kelly Eco and Will. Brad is unable to join us today, so we're going to hold it down, the three of us today. Talk some Rockets Summer League, talk some other interesting stuff that we saw throughout the last week. And we're here to take your questions and talk to you through the chat as well. So make sure you like, you subscribe, wherever you get your podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you're taking part in the comment section, watching live with us, interact with us. We'd love to respond to your comments on air, but also respond as well in the live chat as well. So please get involved. Let's start it off. Kelly, you just came back from Vegas.
Yeah.
How was Vegas and how did you survive that heat?
After, I think this is what, my seventh time for Summer League, maybe six. Vegas is arguably the worst place on earth. just because, like, Houston is humid heat, right? So it's like wet, like it can roll off you. Vegas is like, if you were to put your hand in the oven and turn it on broil and just leave it there. Like it's dry, it sticks to you, and the wind is hot. It's a mess. But the basketball is even worse. So that's the one thing about Summer League when you compare location and experience. But I think it was cool to network. Obviously, you get to see people that you haven't seen in quite some time, and you guys get to congregate around the game, and that's cool. As far as the actual quality of basketball, it's July, so there's only so much you can ask for if you're trying to consume the game as a fan. But it was cool. It was Summer League, and thank God I'm back. So, yeah.
Good to have you back, Kelly. Will, have you ever been to Vegas before for Summer League? And what are some of your initial thoughts this past week watching the Rockets and the NBA at large?
No, I have not been to Summer League. I probably will go ahead and like commit. I will be there this time next year or something like that. It's pretty funny that Kelly said Vegas is the worst place on earth because I don't know if you guys know who DeAndre is from Twitter, but he went down to Summer League. No one's out in Vegas for Summer League as well, and he said the same thing. He's like, it's the worst place. So it's funny. Kelly said the same thing.
Yeah.
But my initial thoughts on the Summer League, I also think Kelly's right. It's nasty basketball, bro. It's some nasty hoops all for just about everybody who was there. You know, I was able to watch not just the Rockets. I watched a couple of, like, the Spurs games. I watched the Sixers play, watched the Hornets play. Like, I've been checking for a lot of the top prospects in this year's class. And, yeah, man, it's some nasty hoops, bro. But – it is cool when you start seeing some of the flashes of the players put it together. You can kind of see, all right, they're not there just yet, but this is what they're going to be when they do put it together. That's always interesting to see. And then it's just interesting to see just like, for me, I always like watching the guys who are fighting for a spot on rosters. Like, how do they approach it? Are they going to come out there and try to do too much, or are they going to try to play a role? Like, I think Kennedy Chandler for the Rockets, I don't know what the future like him looks like, but yeah. I've been thoroughly impressed with some things he's been showing us lately as opposed to, you know, him being not necessarily being a top prospect to keep your eye out on.
Now, he definitely put in a lot of work. And Kelly, I want to go back to something you mentioned at the start of the show where it is ugly basketball, but it's also something that you can pay attention to.
For sure.
To understand what's happening with the team. And no one more important, right, than Reed Sheppard for this Houston Rockets team going into next season. Reed played two games, was then shut down. Of course, you broke a story, or Kelly Eco here did, about Reed not playing the rest of the Summer League.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what did you notice from Reed while you were there in regards to – I know you wrote a whole great story about this. I encourage everyone to go to The Athletic, read Kelly's story. It's fantastic. Beyond the story, Kelly, because I want to make sure people do read it.
Yeah.
Beyond the story, what did you see from Reed that you think it's important for Rockets fans to take away from Vegas?
So I think right off the bat, whenever you talk to coaches, whenever you talk to players about Reed, particularly as it pertains to Summer League, they kept saying that everything that was going on in Vegas was for him. Like, this was going to be not an orientation because he's already had an NBA season under his belt, but just becoming more of a complete basketball player, especially with the role that he has for him next season. They are trying to put him in the best possible position to succeed. And obviously there isn't any better substitute than live game reps. Granted, it is Vegas basketball, but still putting the ball in his hands, empowering him to be a facilitator offensively and be a defensive playmaker at the end of the floor, that's kind of what the coaching staff wanted to see. Now, obviously, if you watch the games, it was a mixed bag. Game one was against the Pistons. No, game one was against the Clippers. I think he had 28 points. He was aggressive, and he got like what, four steals, three blocks. He was super attentive to detail. I think in game two, he wasn't ready for the pressure that the Pistons had. He's like Janis Jenkins. Going back to what Will said about guys trying to make the roster. Those guys are putting 110% effort, and it caught him off guard. And after the game, he talked about he didn't probably expect that level of pressure, guys picking you up full court, 94 feet. And just being rushed into making decisions. I think that was the biggest thing. He kind of struggled with that. But as far as an actual point guard, I think what the Rockets want to see him do more is be more of a assertive ball handler in terms of getting guys in their sets and be able to create for himself and others. Everyone knows he can shoot the ball, so that's never been a question. But if you're going to play under Ime with guys that are now in championship mode, you have to take your game to another level. And I think if Summer League was the barometer for that, I still think, you know, he's a bit of a ways away in terms of a legit rotational piece. But given that he's going to be playing a lot next season, he's going to have to develop pretty quickly because, like I said, these are guys that are thinking about playing in May and June. So you have to actually speed up your process or speed up everything, how you approach the game. And that's what they want to see.
Real quick, Will, before I get to you, Mario in the comments shared, Shepherd does not yet look like the main backup guard of a championship contending team. Let's keep it real. I want us to think about that comment. It's a very, very common sentiment among Rockets fans I've noticed over the last few days. Will, how about you? What are your thoughts on what Kelly shared, and what were some of your own takeaways on Reed from this past weekend?
Yeah, I believe I said this on this podcast last week, right, where I was like, I look at year two Summer League players to like kind of dominate the stage because – they do have that extra year of NBA experience under their belt. And like, even though Reed didn't play that much, I still think that just by virtue of being a year removed from college, being in NBA practices, NBA weight programs, you know, having the trainers, the chefs, different stuff like that, I think that does ultimately matter. And so I look at guys who go into their second season of Summer League and I'm like, you should stand out. Like we should be able to say you are a guy who's been through, like I said, a season of NBA basketball. And like, not to disrespect anyone who's out there in Summer League right now, but we can be honest, it's not the most like extreme competition. It's a lot of guys out there who were either fresh out of college or guys who were outside looking to get into the league. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's not the world's strongest competition. And we saw that when Jabari and Tari played, was that 2 years ago in Summer League, when they were in the second seasons. Jabari looked like the best player on the planet when he was playing in Summer League. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And like Tari was also another guy who was out there who was very dominant. It was very clear those two guys were just way too good for Summer League, and the Rockets shut them down pretty. They didn't play after that, I think, game two. So, So like that's kind of to me what I was looking for. With Reed, I'll say that first game, it started off kind of rough from a scoring perspective, right? Yeah. Because I think defensively, I thought he was amazing game one. I have his stats pulled up. He had four steals and three blocks, and that's one thing that reached out to me was how he was competing on that end. Defensively, he was not getting picked on. As a matter of fact, I would say he was excelling on that end. He was making game-changing plays on the defensive end. I know that's a thing a lot of the Rockets fans were kind of concerned about was would he be too small to play defense? And I always say, like, I think defense is just effort. And I think you saw from Reed, like, he wanted to play defense, and he played really good defense. And then the playmaking, I know he had four assists, but that's because we had a bunch of guys out there who couldn't really shoot one read pass in the basketball. So, but he made a lot of really good reads. Like he was making a lot of great skip passes, a lot of great dump offs, different stuff like that, he had a really nice lob to and follow Deontay as well. Like just the court vision was there. He was just missing the scoring aspect of it. And then he did turn that on a little bit in the second half of the game. So it was like, all right, like, cool. We'll kind of just build off of this and go into game two. But unfortunately in game two, it wasn't really what you were expecting to see from him from a scoring perspective. Because I had the stats pulled up. He did. He finished that game with goodness. I just had it. Okay, I guess it just disappeared. But bottom line is, he did not look as good in the second game from either scoring or playmaking perspective. It was a bit rough. I will say, not to make excuses for it, because I do think he should have played better. But I do think it looked like he was a little bit hobbled at times. Right? There was times where I was like, he's not getting back in transition, or he's not like putting it. It's like he's putting as much effort into the play as he could. And I'm wondering, is that because they shut him down for a reason. So I'm kind of wondering if that calf strain was bothering him to, a degree that was a bit more than what we knew. But at the same time, though, like, I still think that he should have looked a bit better than what he did look in that second game, like, especially from a scoring perspective.
Right.
And I was really, really hoping that we were going to get to see him in a third or maybe even a fourth game to kind of see which version of him we were going to see, like, moving forward, whether it's the version we saw on, was it Friday? When he played against the Clippers and he looked really good, or were you going to see the version of him that was against the Pistons, where it's like, okay, maybe this guy is not as ready as we think he is? I was hoping to kind of see a third, maybe a fourth game to kind of split the difference there, because I'm not going to say I'm concerned, based on what I've saw, because I do have a large sample, which I'll read out in a second. Yeah. But if we did go into a game three, game four, and it was more like what it was the second game against the Pistons, where it's like, okay, he's struggling to just make routine shots. The playmaking is where you want it to be. I would kind of be a little bit concerned going into the regular season. Like, okay, is this guy ready? What do we need to do to get him up to speed? But mm-hmm. And I'll end my playing by saying this. Like I said, we do have just the two games of Summer League this year where it was very up and down for Reed. But like I said, I do want to acknowledge that it's just a two-game sample size. In last year's Summer League, he averaged 20 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, 5 assists per game, 4 stocks on 57 true shooting. In the G League, I think that was 3 games, he averaged 31 points per game, 8 assists per game, 4 rebounds per game, 4 stocks per game, on 64 true shooting. And in his, I believe it's also 3 starts as a starter.
Yeah, 3 starts.
He averaged 20 points per game, 5 assists per game, 3 rebounds per game, 3 stocks per game on 64 true shooting. So, like, composite it all together, like, should we be – like somebody asked, should we be concerned about him as the backup point guard? I'm going to say not yet, but I do think that we need to like take into account, like, he did struggle a little bit of time in summer league. So that's just something to monitor going into the season.
Yeah.
So I want to bring up something that Will, you just mentioned about the fact that he did not dominate. And just to kind of aggregate some of those stats from those two games you mentioned, 7 of 22 combined from 3, those first two games. He had 9 total turnovers, 6 in the second game. That's when he was seeing a lot more of that full court pressure from Detroit, a lot more of that aggressive kind of blitzing defense. He was doubled a lot off of pick and rolls, off of screens, and he had to, and we'll do a breakdown later, a film breakdown of some of those passes. He shot 44% on volume. And the good thing, though, for me was Ime Udoka talked a lot about the fact, even on TV, but he wants to see Reed develop as somebody who's not getting played off the court. That everybody is on the court for them in the season is somebody who can be good defensively,
right,
and compete. Well, he had 8 steals and 3 blocks. There were moments I did not clip them for our show today to show on a Telestrator, but there were moments where he took bad gambles, and I'm like, man, like, they're treating you like another coach on the floor, and you took some really bad like angles and. To be able to kind of take a ball away that really wasn't going to be a steal for you anyways. But then he got some deflections. He had some recoveries when he was beat the first time and kind of recovered for a block. So he has an ability to do those things. And I think he showed defensively that in a system, when you have better defenders on the court, that he can be someone who is serviceable. There was also a point in the game, Will and Kelly, where against Detroit, he was defending a big off the switch, and he held his own because you can tell visibly, especially Kelly, I'm sure you've heard from the coaches, he's added on a lot more upper body.
Yeah, he's much stronger. He's gotten a lot stronger from last season.
Yeah, and so he was doing a good job of kind of staying his ground against a young big, and the teammate was able to come double over. He helped poke the ball away, created a steal, got out in transition. Right. Stuff like that's going to help him. That stuff is going to translate for the NBA season. Now, what's another thing that's going to translate, which I wanted to kind of now pass over to you, Kelly, is He had 9 turnovers, especially 6 in that game against Detroit. Yeah. Is pressure something that bothers him? Or is it something where you feel like, hey, when he's playing on a team that has better spacing and kind of better screeners, to be frank with you, that he will not struggle as much against spacing?
I think if you want to hone in how he handled the pressure, I think it's a number of factors. One, he flat out didn't expect Detroit to come out like that. Number two, the players around him, obviously, it's much easier to handle pressure when you have the proper release valves and floor spacers and rim runners. And if you want to be honest, this Rockets Summer League is probably the worst we've seen in
quite some time.
And that's probably a good thing, because if you're talking about the Rockets as a true contender now, typically contenders don't have the best Summer League teams. That's how it's always been. But for Reed, just trying to see how he handles that pressure, because we all know that Ime loves Aaron Holiday. We know that veteran experience, he can always rely on that. But if Reed is going to play over him this season, he's going to have to adapt, because early on as a rookie, the biggest complaint was he wasn't being aggressive enough. He was deferring too much, where he would have a shot, he wouldn't take it. He wanted to give up a good for a great shot. But the Rockets wanted him to take that good shot because they drafted him for his floor spacing, right? Now, if you go back and watch him at Kentucky, he kind of played the same way. He never really wanted to force the issue. He was always a team, like a glue, like a connective kind of player. And that's why you hear these coaches speak so highly about his game and his character, because that's truly how he carries himself. In the NBA, it's a bit different. Like, there are times where you have to be a star in your role. And if that means you have to take the onus as the aggressor, as the lead ball handler, then so be it. Maybe you can play sometimes with an Amen Thompson who can make it easier for you against some opposing second units to create for others and create for yourself. But some of those reads going back to those two games, some of them were just like, it was a silly pass he tried to give to Dante and it just bounced out of bounds. And like the communication part.
Yeah.
A lot of that also comes into you're playing with guys that you haven't played a lot of basketball with and you're trying to learn on the fly. And we often don't account for that in terms of Summer League basketball, but it's definitely a thing. But this is still a top 5 pick in the draft, like 2 years ago. So there is a level of prestige that he should be playing with, and we kind of didn't see it in Vegas. Now, is that going to carry over to training camp? I don't think so, because, you know, it's a 2-game sample size. We've seen him against NBA competition. I remember going back to the Clippers game and the Lakers in April when those teams were trying to fight for playoff seeding. He played very well against the Thunder. He played very well. So I do think that he can handle that pressure. It's just going to be about adding to that experience, adding to your catalog of seeing how defenders can pick up at different points and playing around it. It's going to help with LP. It's going to help with Amen and having those, especially having Kevin Durant. So I do think he'll be okay, but this was just a bad basketball. Vegas.
Will, do you think there are things, as Kelly just talked about, do you think there are things for Reed that translate to winning? I mean, you're a roster now that's trying to compete for a championship. Were there things that you liked, at least from those two games, where you're like, hey, this translates well for him to be our backup point guard?
Yeah, like the playmaking that he displayed, especially in that first game, like, to me, that is real. I think that's the example of, you have to watch the game and not look at the box score, because I don't think those 4 assists show you
how. A number of great passes. Those guys.
Had so many good passes, so many great skips, like crazy lobs. Like, he had some real brilliance with the ball in his hands, you know, making passes at different points in time throughout that game. It's just, like I said, he was playing with guys who aren't, you know, aren't the best. So it doesn't necessarily result in assists, but, you know, those corner threes that we're going to Nate Williams are going to go to Dorian Finney-Smith, who was a guy who shot like 40-41% from three on corner threes last season, right? That's going to be Jabari Smith Jr. next year, right? Instead of his pick and roll partner being Ifeanyi Deontay, it's Alperen Şengün, Steven Adams, and Clint Capela. Like, he's going to go from guys who are fighting to get into the league to guys who are like starring in their roles in the league. And I think that makes a big difference for him. The part for me that was, I guess, a bit discouraging, it was the scoring, right? And not saying, because he did, like Kelly's right, he did face a lot of, you know, defensive pressure, especially against the Pistons. But there was also some shots where it's just like, no, these are just kind of routine shots that you just missed. It's like I said, I'm not necessarily concerned, as in like ring the bell. He may not be the guy. Did we make a mistake? I'm not there. Yeah. But you know, I wish I had more sample to make a conclusion off of, because I don't have enough right now to feel confident one way or the other. I will say this is, you know, two things for the people out there who are concerned about Reed, and or is he, you know, being cast in too big of a role for him yet? We're asking him to play backup point guard. And if you like you want to feel about Fred VanVleet, you know, he's a year older, making less money, but I don't think Fred VanVleet's going into next season. You know, he played, what, 35-ish minutes a game last season? I think he's still going to play north of 33 minutes per game next year. I think that's still going to happen. So, like, that, you know, that's point guard minutes going there. I think they're going to still see a healthy amount of minutes with Amin Thompson at the guard spot. And I think he actually will lead our team in minutes next season. And so we're asking Reed to be the backup guard in, like, 15, maybe, you know, high-end 18 minutes per game. And, you know, one thing I've been saying a lot is, like, if you don't have the faith that the guy that you drafted number three overall can't even give you 15 minutes a night as the backup point guard, then you shouldn't have drafted him. And I think the Rockets do feel confident in him. There's a reason they drafted number three overall. And so, like, we're not asking him to do something, you know, that's just complicated or, you know, just crazy difficult. We're not asking him to be the starting point guard of a contender. Right. We're asking you to give us a quality 15 minutes a night, which I don't see why, when he's around actual NBA athletes, NBA personnel, that he won't be able to impact the game on that level. And then if you're somebody who is like, well, no, I don't think he can even do that for you. Was it Kelly or I'm sorry. I think Kelly said it about Aaron Holiday. I don't know too many guys out there on the market right now for, you know, because we're working with vet minimum money right now. That's pretty much all we can give out is vet mins.
Right.
I don't know too many vet minimums that are better than Aaron Holiday, right? Like, I don't. Like, I know Malcolm Brogdon's a pretty popular name out there. And I love Malcolm Brogdon's game when he was with the Celtics. But that was, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, it's a long time since then.
He's had some injuries that have kind of zapped him of the player that he once was. And even though he may get back to that player, he's kind of the definition of injury prone right now. So yeah. I'm not sure that he, at this point in time, is better than Aaron Holiday. I can't tell you that with confidence. I can't tell you that. Was the Anthony Melton same thing there? Injuries have kind of zapped him of his game. I don't know if he's better than Aaron Holiday right now. I think people kind of underrate Aaron Holiday as a guy who is, you know, 6'2", 6'3", can shoot the ball at a decent clip, can defend it a decent clip. He knows his role. He plays his role. And he's familiar with our guys and with our system. I'm not really sure you'll find a better, you know, replacement guard for Reed that's not Aaron Holiday. And, like, hopefully – we don't have to get to that. Hopefully Reed's just the guy and he's ready for it. We don't have to, you know, worry about this Aaron Holiday ready to play backup point guard.
I want to put Reed on the side for a second for both of you. I'm going to chime in on this part too. Is the Rockets backup point guard, should that player be focused more on shot making, or should that player be more focused on shot creating? And I have some thoughts. I want to hear from both of you first and I'll share my thoughts. Should Reed or whoever is going to be in that role, should they be more focused on that shot creating, or should they be focused more on the shot making? Given, as you talked about, Fred probably still going to play heavy minutes.
Right.
Point guard going to play 15 to 18. I'll start with you, Kelly, then I'll go to you, Will.
So if you are looking at where the Rockets struggled last season in the half court, it comes down to making shots, right? So if you are bringing in Reed, who is thought to be this great shooter, I think his primary goal, and that's why the Rockets were pissed off earlier in the season, was because he wasn't shooting. Like, they want him to make shots. I don't think they're expecting you to go out there and be a all-star level creator, because you're still, with 6'2 and a half, you're still growing, trying to get stronger. This is the NBA, it's incredibly physical. They just want you to be confident in your shot taking and your shot making, because that opens up the floor for everything else. We've seen how great three-point shooters can make the game easier, open up another layer of offense for the guys around them without just by their sheer gravity. So I do think that shot making for Reed as opposed to shot creating, because I think he shot, what, 33.8 from three last season? And that's not really an accurate, in my opinion, descriptive of how he can shoot, because the role was inconsistent. So, you know, if you get in the game and you go 1 for 3, that's 33% already right there. So I think for him, it's going to be more important to make those shots as opposed to create, because they have enough creators. They have Alpi, they have Amin, they have Fred, you know, they have KD now. They have guys that can create shots. So I do think it's going to be on spacing the floor and hitting those threes.
How about you, Will?
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say it's more on the shot making. I think we're lucky that Reed kind of projects to be pretty good at both of them.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of what we need more like on this team right now, is the shot making, like getting your own shot up, right? We don't really have that many guys. We have a lot of guys like Dorian Finney-Smith and Jabari and Tari, guys who do a lot of catch and shooting. We don't have that many guys who do a lot of pull up off the dribble shooting. We don't have, you know, I think Fred and KD are probably the only guys on the team who are like, like we can rely on the opponent to do that. And like, I won't tell you that I think that we should have kept Jalen Green, but that is one thing Jalen Green did do well, was that he, or not, I'm sorry, not do well, but one thing that he did bring to this team was he was someone who we could ask to hit a pull-up three. And we didn't necessarily replace, well, we replaced it with KD, but we didn't replace just that production in general. And so I think when Reed comes in, I need him to come in and make shots. That's one of the reasons why him struggling to make shots in Summer League was a little bit like I understand you're playmaking well, you're defending well, but I need you to hit these shots, because that's what we're going to need him to do. I'm going to need him to come in next season and hit, you know, take four threes off the bench and make two and a half of them. Like, I need him to do stuff like that, because we don't really have that many guys who can do it on the perimeter. And so, no, I think that's obviously a bit more important right now for what this specific team needs. I think we need to make shots.
In that first game against the Clippers, where he excelled offensively, especially in that second half, he was 4 of 10 on non-3-point shots. That's, to me, is going to be all about how much playing time he gets. If he can score at 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10 on those 2-point shots, he's going to continue to get playing time. Because what I saw from him that translates well, just from a schematic perspective, is when he would get the ball early in transition or he would get the rebound, he pushed it right away, and he helped the Rockets start their possessions early in summer. It's so important for that second unit. The Rockets like to run. You need to make sure you have that continuity with Fred on the floor and then having Reed come in to help push the pace and generate early offense. That's going to be key for him. Second thing is defensive pressure, creating offense as well. He was able to get steals and tips and push ahead. You have a lot of Rockets athletes in that second unit, and Tari and others who like to just attack the sidelines and the rails or attack the middle of the floor. Having Reed to be able to make those passes and push early and being able to make that lead pass is also important. So I think shot creating for him will help. But as you mentioned, the shot making is key here. He was aggressive on those threes. There was a few possessions I'll show here in a moment on the telestrator. Came off a pin down, had a screen and roll at the top of the key. Defenses knew he wanted to take the shot. That's the key here. If we're talking about him being a shot maker, he has to be ready for defenses then to swarm him. The Pistons game, for example, with the ball pressure and then off the ball having two guys converge on him as soon as he crossed the perimeter, he had to make those passes where when he was taking shots, they weren't necessarily the most high-efficient shots, but he was being aggressive. And so I wonder what that balance is going to be like for him in regards to taking those shots, making those threes, as we saw, especially in that Clippers game, and then also being someone who can generate some shot attempts for others. And real quick, guys, I want to show – go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
I want to throw in one thing to what you just said, too, about the way he's guarded. That is one thing that that even when he struggled at times last year, Reed was still guarded like he was a threat to shoot the ball, like a real guard, not just a guy who's out there who can make a shot. Like, they were guarding him like he is a 40% shooter. And that matters because a lot of spacing, I think I always mispronounce the OKC head coach last name, but Mark, whatever.
Dignall.
I always mispronounce his last name. One thing he said, and I completely agree with him, is spacing is a lot more about reputation than percentages. And the proof of that is Reed Shepard and then, like, for example, Dylan Brooks last season. Dylan shot 39.7%, 39.8%, something like that, like almost 40% from three.
But defenses don't respect him. Yeah.
Defenses never guarded him. And I mean, what you're supposed to do when they don't guard you is you make them pay, which Dylan did do. But like, that does hurt spacing. Just because you shoot 40% from three does not mean you're providing spacing. I love Dylan to death, but he wasn't providing spacing because defenses didn't guard him. Reed Shepard, even though he shot 33% from three, defenses guarded him. That guy did not get left open. And so, like, obviously we need him to take and make those shots. But just inherently being on the floor and having that gravity as a shooter where defense aren't leaving you open, that is going to make a difference for men, for Şengün. And then we introduce KD into the fold like that. It's going to make a difference for those guys. And so I think that is important to note.
Yeah. And I'll real quick, too, before you get into your breakdown. Defensively, going back to his defensive playmaking, there was a time where I think they came out in zone and they had Reed essentially as the low man. And being able to toggle between having him higher up and then, you know, lower back because of his ability to play on the ball, I think if he's able to play well in zone, it makes a lot of things easier for Ime because everyone knows that NBA teams are going more and more with zone. And the key to having success in the zone is having guys that can create havoc. And one thing Reed does well, even though he does take a lot of gambles, he has a unique knack of timing for the ball. And I think teams don't think that because he has a short wingspan that he can get to the ball, but he's actually very quick, kind of like an NFL safety in terms of how he times the ball and goes after it. So I want to see how that translates to actually playing a zone with a man, Taurage. But like, because there are ways I was talking to Eastern Conference staffer, and he compared it to how the Heat used to use Kyle Lowry in the zone, and because of his ability to create havoc and box out and crash. And there was a moment where Reed actually did that. He boxed out the big man for Detroit, and that was hilarious. But just seeing how aggressive he can be defensively, I think should help to bridge the gap, even if he's not, you know, hitting three threes a game.
I think, Kelly, that's a fantastic point. It's making me want to go back and look at some Kyle Lowry film with the Heat, because you bring up a great point. They had length on those teams that went to conference finals and finals every single year. And Eric Spoelstra, even more than Ime Udoka, loves playing zone and hybrid zone. And I think Boston, when Ime Udoka was there, and Miami were the two biggest, or like the biggest introducers, I would say, of zone defense. A good thing for Rockets fans who are watching this, if you're interested to seeing, hey, how can Reed be used defensively, go look at some Kyle Lowry tape as Kelly talked about, and even maybe looking at Peyton Pritchard, some of their smaller guards in the Boston days, and see how Ime Udoka would use those smaller guards in zone or on off-ball man-to-man coverage. Real quick, before we move on to some other Summer League finds, I wanted to show – I have some clips. I'm going to give a big shout-out to Rockets Clips on Twitter because they were the ones who put this passing compilation together. Big shout-out to them. I want to go through a few of the clips from there and just talk about some of the things I saw, at least. And so, by the way, Rockets Clips, their ad is Rockets_clips. They post clips, I feel like, of every key play.
They was watching that nasty Summer League game yesterday. I don't know how they was watching
it. Dedicated.
Shout out to them.
So shout out to them. I'm going to just play some and go through some clips. And then Kelly will also, if you guys see some things we're going through it, please chime in and we'll talk about it.
Now Kobe Brown, Garden Shepherd.
Okay, I'm going to turn the sound off so we can kind of enjoy it. So one thing I saw a lot in the Summer League, at least for Reed, was he struggled getting separation, not necessarily because of his ball handling and the physicality only, but because his bigs sometimes were not the best at setting the screens and they didn't have the best rhythm for him to come off and do things. So you saw a lot of what you're about to see on this clip, having to use his kind of ball handling to get past that big. And so we're going to see that here where he comes off the screen, right? And immediately he still has the guy on his back. And then he has somebody who's playing high coverage. And on the weak side, you see two guys. And the thing with Reed is, one thing I want to really give him credit for, and you'll see this in every single clip, when he comes off the screen, he's not just reading his big, he's reading the low man right away and seeing what's going on. Can he take the middle? Can he go to the side? What's happening here? In this case, he
cross court to Neil Williams,
he's just kind of serving what's going on. Somebody in the dunker spot baseline contains a defender, makes that cross court pass to Nate Williams. Now, Kelly and Will, I'm going to ask you, this is not a knock on Jalen. This is just a straight up fact. Besides Fred VanVleet last year, who else on this team could make a consistent cross court pass? Who was a guard?
A man could do that a lot. He did that a lot last season.
But that was one of Jalen's. And this is something that Reed has shown constant time and time that he can constantly do. And so I want to give props to Reed because he will not make this pass until he sees that passing window open. But he is consistent with that shot. There were some off kind of passes that just comes to do with chemistry and not playing with some of these teammates a lot. But he can make that cross-court pass into the shooting pocket, and that was really impressive. Right.
Going back to what you said about Dante and the relationship with Reed and Dante, there were a number of times where Reed was trying to tell him where to be offensively. And if you go back to kind of how the Clippers are in the kind of like a fake zone, there were instances where they were doing a DHO and Reed would kind of duck under the big because he knew that if the angle wasn't good enough, defense could just easily pinch and block that off, and he would have to work harder for a better shot. So it's going to be really important to work with the likes of Al P if they're playing small, with Jabari at the big, Steven Adams, who's a great screener with the angles, Clint Capella now, who's also there. That relationship is very underrated because as the big, you are the conductor on the floor, so you can create spaces even when there aren't any. And I think that's one thing where they struggle to do in Vegas, and that's why, as you can see, there's two guys on the ball because the angle that Dante was, it wasn't good enough. So it's going to be a big thing for them, for Reed next season for sure.
And I do want to highlight this clip because it wasn't Dante who made this play happen. It was Reed. Let's go back, Kelly, like he talked about, the contact on the screen. As soon as he makes it, the ball handler is right there.
Right.
You want to at least get a step ahead. But look at the defender. He's already over the hip. He's already over the hip. And what happens is that Reed immediately gets two on the ball, as you see right here. Playing high, they're trying to take away his three. The big is not going to let him step into a pull-up three. Well, as you have talked about, that Reed is really good at. And so then you open all that space here in the middle of the floor. What are you going to do in the middle of the floor? So can Reed just go ahead and make the pass now? Yeah, but if he lobs it over, you got two defenders near the nail who can come up and tip the ball away.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of keep playing it out. So look at Reed. Look how he still moves to the side, but moves north to south at the same time. He moves to the side, makes sure he drags the defenders with him. Then he finds the low man and he sees, okay, is the low man here or is it here? Well, he's helped over, but this other low man, because the shooters are here on the sides, he's gone ahead and stepped in. And there's an open shooting pocket, wasted the last possible moment, finds that pass to Dante for the alley-oop. So, like I said, he's at least making those tertiary reads in the half court, which I think is very important. A lot of these examples here, like here, Nate Williams, where he's making those cross-court passes. Now, here's a good solid screen, right? Good solid screen. He comes off. He has separation. Now he's like, okay, good. I can be fast and attack the feet of the big and maybe get a one-on-one, get to the rim. I have Dante, who's about to roll to the rim, and I have guys who are helping off my shooters. So let's look at what Reed decides to do here. He comes off. They're converging on Reed. Look at the corner. Wide open. Finds Nate. Nate doesn't take the shot. Drives in. Eventually gets a layup and a follow through to go through. But those are the types of things I think will translate, just being able to make these decisions. Look, another example here.
That's a beautiful pass, bro.
Beautiful pass. Let's watch that again.
That's such a good
two
pass.
Two guys on him. How does he even see the guy in the corner?
It's a point.
It's a natural point guard.
One hand. Natural
point guard. Yeah.
Man, so many goes misses off his passes. Man, it's crazy. Here we go. Here's a rescreen. I like this a lot. Okay, you're gonna be physical with me. That's fine. I'm gonna get a rescreen. I'm gonna come off. I'm gonna go to my weak hand. This is a weak defensive coverage by Detroit. Trying to play his left hand. Look at this. Even though he's driving left, look what he does. Makes another great pass to the corner. You know, it's just these small things that, you know, do an excellent job of really kind of getting him open and doing those things. So that's pretty much it for me. I wanted to make sure that we kind of highlight some of these things from a passing perspective that really do show him to be a good creator. Now, ultimately, as well, you mentioned, he has to be able to hit his shots. And I think he did well on the creation side. I'd like to have seen him more consistently make those pull-up threes. But I think, in my opinion, when you're seeing him, in a situation where he's around better spacing, he will be able to do that. But the Detroit game, you know, does bring about some questions, right? Ball pressure, when he was guarded by guys who were 6'5 or had long wingspans, that's the game where he had six turnovers. They were rushing him, trying to be disruptive in the passing lane. He wasn't able to get as much separation off those pressures and isolation. And then he is a really smart basketball player. But if you're constantly pressuring someone and they have to make decisions quickly, or quicker than they're more used to, that's what causes issues. And that's something Reed will have to get better at over time. Having more strength helps with that, but you have to be able to do other things, and that's where practice comes into play.
Yeah, I think that's going to go – it goes really hand-in-hand with the strength conditioning, because if you go back to that Detroit game, some of the reasons why he felt, I guess, frustrated was because when he would cross half court, there were times where if you turn the corner with force and strength, you can actually get by those guys, because these are still – these aren't NBA-level defenders that are coming at you. So if you're able to overpower them and fight through that pressure, then you can get to your second and third reads. But a lot of times he was stifled at the beginning. And that kind of, you know, anytime you have the mental games and players are yelling, give me that, you know, like early on, that kind of, that stuff kind of builds up. And it can affect you if you allow it to get to you. So I think a big thing for Reed is continuing to become stronger. Upper body strength, hand strength is a big thing. And being able to have that force. Like if you watch Amen, the way he has the ball, he's not the best ball handler himself, but the force and strength he has, you're not going to like strip the ball from him. You're not going to pressure him like this. So getting to that level, and obviously it's a big height difference, but there are ways where he can improve from a physical standpoint to make everything easier, you know, for everyone else.
And granted, Kelly, even back to the Clips, there's a reason why those corner passes were open, because that Summer League team was not a good shooting team. They were willing to give up those threes, but you can't do that in the regular season against Dorian Finney-Smith. You won't be able to do that against Kevin Durant, against Tari Eason, Jabari Smith, who will be in the corners, who are some of the Rockets' better three-point shooters. I want to finish off talking about Reed and talk about some other stuff from Summer League with this question here from Mario. What is plan B in case Shepherd is not ready for a bigger role this season? Let's say we get to January. In-season tournament has gone on.
Yeah.
You've seen enough time from Reed. Clear that he's good, but he still needs time. Yeah. What do you think the Rockets will do now, especially that they have only 13 players in the roster? Kelly, I'll start with you, then I'll go to Will.
Well, the answer is Ime's number one option, which is more Fred. I mean, Fred played a crap ton of minutes last season. You know, I've talked to Fred a lot, and he's of the same belief. Like, if Reed plays well, he can rest his body. Like, he took a lot of beating last season. And these older players, they want to save their bodies for the playoffs, right? They want to be fresh. That's kind of why they brought in Clint, because, you know, now Steven Adams doesn't have to play back-to-back. He doesn't have to play every game, 3 and 4 nights. So if Reed plays well, you know, he can play less. But if he was to struggle, he may as good to go to Fred Moore, or is going to bring Aaron. Do I think that's the best thing? Probably not. I think it would behoove them to get Amen some more on-ball reps as a lead ball handler. Because now there's Uber spacing around him. So I think that could be a thing. They could even stagger, kind of how they did with James and Chris long time ago. But there are solutions. Like, it doesn't have to be – I don't think it's a make or break thing that Reed has to just come in and be this voila guy, because they have enough depth where they should be able to sustain even if he's not playing. But if the option is playing Fred Moore, I'm not sure if that's the best thing because of the health. And then if the option is playing as opposed to playing, you know, Amen more or giving Aaron some burn.
Well, how about you? What do you think?
Like I said, I hope that this is kind of like a conversation that we won't have to have. Like, I hope that Reed is just ready to assume that role. Cause like I said earlier, like, I don't think we're asking him to do something that's super duper complicated. We're asking him to, like I said, be a serviceable NBA player in 15 minutes a game off the bench on a contender. And I think that's a job, but I think he can do it. I feel like if you didn't believe in him that much, then you shouldn't have drafted him number 3 overall. But that being said, in the, you know, hopefully unlikely event where he is not ready though, I think Holiday is the option there. I think he's, like I said, he's someone who can hit threes. I think he shot like 38-39% from three last year. And he's someone who stays ready, right? So, like, he doesn't, like, get too many warm-up shots. So, he comes in, makes plays. I remember it was a game, not this season, but last season, I believe, where he played OKC. And I think we won in no small part thanks to Aaron Holiday coming off the bench. I think he hit, like, 4 or 3.
Four threes,
off the bench, like, crazy. And then he competes defensively. That, like, to me, that's, I think, the biggest reason why Ime likes playing him is because he's not necessarily, like, the world's best defender. Like I said, he's still kind of small himself. He's, like, what, 6'1", 6'2"? But he competes. He plays hard on that end. He gives you effort on that end. And I think that's really all Ime asks of you, is if you're going to play, give 110% effort on defense. And he's someone who does that. So I can see, I think that's kind of the most likely option here in the event that Reed is not ready. Yeah. Somebody did say inches of them sliding our small force down to shooting guard. They did play, funny enough, they did play Tari
and shooting guard,
a lot to end the season. When they started going double big, they had those lineups where it was like a Amin at the one, Tari at the two, Fari at the three, Shingo at the four, Steven at the five. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say that was a pretty good lineup. I mean, I think every lineup we had with double big ended up being really well. And so, like, it wouldn't surprise me if they decide to kind of go up a position and have Tari play some shooting guard in this event. But like for me, you want Reed to be ready. Like that to me, that's just that has to be the only option there, is that he has to be ready. And I look at it a lot of like the way the Rockets kind of ran back in 2018, when it was with Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon. Yeah. Like the way we had two of those three guys on the court at all times throughout that season, I think that next season should be very similar to that with Fred VanVleet, Amin Thompson, and Reed Shepard, where at all times we have two of those three guards on the court, and you have just constant, you know, consistent creation on the perimeter from one of those guys. But to me, that has to be like that has to be the only option.
I think for me, one kind of outside perspective I'd like to bring, we haven't talked about him yet, is Alperen Şengün. For as much as he gets credit for being a creative passer and a playmaker, he has struggled a little bit in terms of his passing the last two seasons compared to his first season or so in the league. I'd like to see him be a lot more comfortable making some of these passes, making better reads out on the perimeter. I think he's such a gifted playmaker that if he can be somebody who we lean into as a engine or a hub or running more elbow action, the Rockets will run a lot more horns. You saw a lot of horns action in the summer league Rockets. I think that will continue because of the double big lineup. If Alperen Şengün can continue to excel out of horns, I think that's really going to open up a lot more for this team and take away a responsibility for Reed, especially with the second unit, because then you have Alperen who can kind of be that hub for you on the elbow, and he's a much better screener than some of these younger guys were for the Rockets Summer League right now. So just another perspective, I think Alperen can hopefully take a step up and be a good playmaker into the season. So we talk a lot about Reed. I want to get to a comment that Ime Udoka made in Summer League. But before we do that, I just want to spend a moment to ask each of you, give you about 30 seconds. Any other players that stood out to you from this Rockets Summer League team that you want to give a shout out to, or you think have a shot at competing for an Exhibit 10, a two-way contract, et cetera, for the Rockets going to training camp? Will, I'm going to start off with you, and then I'll get to Kelly.
Yeah, I said earlier, Kennedy Chandler. He looked really good in the games that I did watch, and I didn't watch yesterday's game once they said Reed wasn't going to play. But I want to say, yeah, he played pretty well for us. Yeah, he had 22 points, 7 assists in that game as well. And so, like, obviously it is just summer league hoops, but that is somebody who I wouldn't hate to see on the Vipers next season. Like, just kind of keep him around, see what he has in him, because he was someone who was kind of highly respected coming out of high school. And then things kind of didn't go his way in college, but just like that's someone who did show me a little something in summer league. So, like, I'm intrigued to see what that could look like with some more time.
Kelly, how about you?
Yeah, I think Kennedy and Kevon Harris also, you know, he's pretty aggressive. He seems like a really good Vipers player, just in terms of how he approaches the game through levels. Might not be the NBA processor that you want to see, but on a two-way, I think there's more than enough there to justify, you know, spending time with the Vipers, the occasional call-up on a long road trip when you have injuries, and just being around the system. I think it does a lot of players good. Like we saw, even though those guys didn't like hang around for the long haul, like Jack McVay, but just being around this system can actually help you as a developmental player. So Kennedy and Kevon played really well.
I really liked watching Arms play yesterday with the bigger role.
Arms was good. He was good.
Giannis Arms, I thought he did a good job, and he's someone who I could see compete for a spot with the Vipers. He has previous shooting experience as well. Who can kind of play a role. But Chandler is very interesting because with a team that has a bunch of bigs and wings, you want to see how they can develop maybe some guards to come out of their G League roster and maybe potentially contribute this season, next season, or seasons down the line. Great. And I appreciate everybody sharing their thoughts on Summer League. We spent a lot of time, almost most of our show, talking about it. Now, I'm gonna pass it off to Kelly, because Kelly was working on a story and previously going into the offseason, then about Jabari, and then we listened to Ime Udoka in the interview that he did against him in the Pistons game, and he mentioned something interesting, and I want to have Kelly read a quote that Ime made during that segment that he did, and just have some a quick conversation about what our thoughts are on that.
All right, so what Ime said, because I was at the game, he said something to the effect of, he was talking about Jabari Smith and what his role would look like next season, and he was praising how he was able to create his shot against the Warriors, right, when the Warriors went zone, and how he was able to get that shot off and how it should look next season. I found that interesting because if you look at the totality of Jabari's career, I think this season he took the least number of mid-range shots in his career. And now, obviously, he took slightly more threes and that's the rim. But that Warriors series, it was really about almost the erasure of his role, like as a player. Like, obviously, he lost his starting spot to a man, and that took off. So you can't blame that. But even when he came back, you know, from the injury, he was used almost like a bit part player. And against the Warriors that went zone almost exclusively, he was the one player that could create a shot within those gaps. And I think if teams are going to use more and more zone, especially against Houston that struggled in the half court, you need guys that can create their own shot. So, you know, I talked to Jabari and I asked him, like, how do you plan to optimize that next season? Because it's clear that it's a strength of yours. Now, it might not be the go-to weapon that you want it to be in year three, but it's still a good enough skill where if you continue to harness it, it can be a tool. And he told me, he said, it's going to be great. It's just going to be knowing what times to get to it and just trying to get to it more. That's what I've been working on this summer, just different ways to get to it, different ways to get to different spots and just being efficient with it without hurting the offense or taking away from his great three-point shooting ability. I think the biggest takeaway from that is doing it within the flow of the offense and not hurting everything else. Because obviously, if you're a young player, you just signed a $120 million deal. You want to go into the next season, you wanted to prove something, add to your game to show that you belong, right? Now, you obviously added Kevin Durant, who's probably the greatest mid-range sniper in the history of the game. So there is a bit of overlap there if you guys both do similar things. But a lot of times last season, his role became clunky because of the spacing. Going back to what Will said about spacing, it's kind of hard to get to your pull-ups when you're around LP, who was going to be in the elbows, Steven Adams was going to be there. Sometimes a man could be in the short role. It was kind of difficult for him to get to those spots. So I want to see how they continue to optimize it. If Ime is actually going to be for real about tapping more into that, because that is a weapon that they can use time and time again. If teams go 2-3 zone and you have KD on one side and Jabari on the other side, that opposing defense is going to come out of that zone pretty quickly because those are wide open shots time and time again. So I think Jabari was pretty forthcoming in what he's good at. Now, the biggest thing is how does the coaching staff actually harness that?
Look, Kelly, one thing you mentioned, and I remember the game again, and I'm mentioning Miami again after you mentioned Miami. There's a game against Miami in the spring, I think it was March, where he scored like 18 points against their zone. And one thing that I remember that. Yeah. During that game was that Şengün was setting a lot of screens playing up top because of the zone. Jabari, they would put him in the high post, but then they also would put him in the dunker spot. And what I thought was interesting in the dunker spot is he would pick his spots to be able to kind of migrate to the three-point line. Right. And then migrate out to the high post, get some quick shots, knock it down. And if you look at his numbers, Jabari is a very good shooter when he doesn't think about it. When he gets the ball, he's open, he's already set, or without kind of like less than a second with the ball in his hands, he's very efficient at his shots. I think for mid-range, he's like 48 to 50% on mid-range shots when kind of left open, 40% open catch and shoot threes. So clearly he is that one of those really good floor spacers you have. And if you allow him to maybe come off of movement, I think the part of the quote, your quote that stands out to me is different ways to get different spots, get to different spots and just being efficient with it without messing up the offense or taking away from my great three-point shooting ability. I think that game is a perfect example of that. He was playing the role they wanted him to, allowing the stars and the guys who are going to handle the ball to be involved in the action, and then reading the defense and then getting into those gaps. When he gets into those gaps, his 6'11 size, long wingspan, he can get that shot off over any defender. And I think that's a good example. And maybe the Rockets are going to lean more into that going into the season. So I'm glad you were able to share that quote. Well, what do you think about what Jabari mentioned?
I think he has to kind of take that leap for us this year because, I mean, one, he's getting paid now. Like that, you know, he didn't get paid like some crazy amount of money. Like he's getting paid like six man, maybe like fifth starter kind of money. So like he's, you know, it's not the end of the world, but he's getting paid though. You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like now that like you're getting paid, the Rockets have invested in you and your future here. It's time to kind of take that leap. And I guess I've been labeled the Jabari hater for really pointing it out. But up until this point, when we're about to go into year four, and for someone who was advertised as an elite knockdown shooter, he hasn't shot even league average yet. Right? He's been 1-2% below league average all 3 years of his NBA career so far.
Especially being a volume shooter.
Yeah. And you know, feel like you want to feel about it. We're not asking him to shoot crazy movement off the dribble threes. He's for the most part catching shooting on mostly open looks. So, like, you know, like I need to see him take a more of a step up in that direction. The defense, I think, could take a step up as well. That's one thing that I said. I think he's a bit better at rim protection than being the switch defender that we kind of thought we were drafting. So for me, it's just like maybe he needs this extra year. You know, was the thing we said last year, year four is the new year three. Maybe year four is the year where it just like clicks for him. He has Kevin Durant is like the foundation and the example of what it looks like. He gets to work out with this guy every single day in practice.
Yeah.
And I just think that because the Rockets have invested so much like faith into him in his future, because like I mean they could have I don't know if Kelly wants to share this, but what wasn't one of the things that the Suns were kind of looking for was Jabari. They wanted Jabari for KD, and the Rockets said no, you're not getting Jabari. And so like to say we're not going to trade you for Kevin Durant, that means we believe in you. Like we believe that there's something there for you to like tap into. So I think this just has to be the year where like he starts really putting it out there. Like we saw flashes of it in the playoffs. I want to see, you know, larger samples of it. And so yeah, I feel decently confident about him coming into this season.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts on the email quote? If not, I got one more final question for both of you. After our show last week, the NBA Cup 2025 groups were released, and the Rockets were placed in West Group C. And you're going to see that image on your screen just now. Okay, there we go. Everybody can see it now. Curious from both of you, what are your initial thoughts on the Rockets being placed in this group, and who do you think, as of today, will be the winner out of Group C? I'm going to start off first. I'll say I think it's a very difficult group. You have the Nuggets. You're going to have the Warriors there. Then the Warriors are a team, the way their roster is built, if they can sign Al Horford and some other guys that can play those, like a play-in type of game situation where they have to win. They have the roster to kind of play those in-it-to-win-it types of games, be a winner-go-home games and win it. So I think they're going to be up there. Denver, I think, is the second-best team in the West, as we've talked about previously. San Antonio, you know, and Portland are teams that are going to be scrappy. Portland's going to be one of the better defensive teams in the league. I ultimately think Denver will win this group. I think the Rockets will move on into NBA Cup as a wild card team. But that's how I'm seeing it right now. But we have a long way to go in the offseason. Kelly, Will, what do y'all think about Group C? How will the Rockets finish?
Hey, the cup is still confused. Like, so you finish second, you're automatically a wild card team, right? This shit is confused.
Well, you have to have a certain record.
Okay. So yeah. I do think that they have enough to be finish second. It is a scrappy group because the Spurs are gonna be very competitive. That rivalry is already there. The Warriors, the mental aspect of that, Denver being, you know, as fortified as they are. They got even better. They took the champs to seven games. And Portland had a sneaky good offseason. And if you watch them the second half of the year, much better defensively, much more compact offensively. you're starting to see what they're trying to build there. It's going to be tough. And these NBA Cup games are always weird. So I do think players treat it differently than a regular season game. So you will see some wacky hot shooting performances. So I think they have enough to be close to first, but they're probably not going to win the group.
I feel like with these kind of like tournament style things, a lot of this is, I believe, what, single elimination and stuff like that. Like it's a lot of like win one game, lose one game, and you're in and out the tournament. Anything can happen. Like it legitimately would not shock me if like the Spurs come out this group. And I think that they're, you know, just in terms of regular season standings, they might be third or fourth of the five people here. So like, I don't know. I can't really tell you who I think would win it. I tell you that if I had to rank the teams in terms of like the best teams in the group, I think we're better than Denver, even though they did get a lot better this offseason and they have Nikola Jokic. I think I would take us over Denver, but then I would have Denver at two. I'd put San Antonio at three, Golden State at four, and Portland at five. And I like to Kelly's point, to respect the Portland, I think that they are I think they're gonna be a lot better next season. So no slouches in this group.
They competed for a play-in spot at least towards the end of the season. So I mean they are a team that I think you know they still need some more things, but they're going to be competitive. They're going to play some really good defense. Got about three or four really good lockdown team type of defenders. You know, it'll be really fun to see. Kelly, you wrote an excellent article this week. I want to make sure everybody hears me say it again. Please go read it. Will had a really great announcement today about joining another podcast. Congratulations, Will. Looking forward to seeing more coverage from you there. Brad will be back next week with us. And we're looking forward to talking to you guys again next week after Rockets Summer League about what's happening, what's going on in Houston Rockets basketball. Thank you so much. Hope you have a great rest of your night. We'll see you next Tuesday.